Alexander Snitker, libertarian, Republican, and political hack. And Adrian Wiley, born-again anarchist and political has-been. Banter, blather, and joke about current events while attempting to figure out whether to keep trying to salvage our constitutional republic or just stock up on marshmallows to roast on the smoldering embers of society. It's time for Unattended Baggage.
Why, thank you, Scott. Hello, everyone in Podcastville or Internet Land or wherever you may reside. This is Alex, co-host, Unattended Baggage. Along with me is my radio life mate, the man, the myth, the legend, Mr. Adrian Osama Wiley. How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing great, Alex, and it's great to be back with you on another episode of Alex and Adrian's Fantasy Football Live. Today, we're going to go into whether this is the breakout week for Baker Mayfield. Can the Patriots defense maintain their dominance? And right now, let's go ahead and go to the sit or start questions. We like to do this every week. Josh in New Hampshire is asking whether to go with James Conner or David Montgomery. And, you know, that's a trick question. It's a tough question, I should say, because, you know, Conner has been battling injury all week.
Hold on a second. Hang on real quick, Adrian.
Yeah.
Do you know what show you're doing right now?
Yeah, Adrian and Alex's Fantasy Football Live. So,
what episode is
James Conner?
Well,
we're on episode 16.
Episode 16.
James Conner has been battling injury all week.
Did I actually get
roofied? He's on the waiver wires. Now, he might be a good streamer.
You're on the waiver wires.
He might be a good streamer to pick up this week. But then again, David Montgomery, you know, Chicago's been feeding him the ball.
Feeding them the rock.
Yeah, so I don't know whether this is the week where he's really going to have that breakout and he's going to shine like he did in college, breaking tackles. So all in all, Josh, I would say probably your best bet is to just stick with the guys that got you there and go with James Conner.
You know, I don't think that that's what we're doing this week.
What do you mean?
I want to make sure I say this as delicately as possible because you may have a brain injury right now, but we don't actually do a podcast on fantasy football. We do it on fantasy politics.
You sure it's not wrestling?
No, that's me and Greg.
Hey, I was trying to, what is that wrestling phrase?
It's a work or shoot.
Okay. Oh, now you really screwed me up.
Sorry.
I was trying to figure out the whole work or shoot thing. But I got to say, I wouldn't mind if we integrated a little fantasy football segment every week, because I love talking about fantasy football. I love talking about football in general. So,
do you really?
Yeah. And I know you're kind of out of the sports thing, aren't you?
Yeah, I don't really care about football at all anymore.
Really?
Not even. You know what it is? Here's what it is. I can sit and watch a football game now. I just take no emotional interest in who wins and who loses for the most part. Like, I mean, I guess I do kind of care if the Bucks win, but it's very selfish for the reason, though, because I only care if the Bucks win is that everybody else in Tampa seems to be in a better mood if the Bucks win.
Wait a second. So literally, your outlook and your reasons for watching sports are pretty much the same as the reasons you now follow politics. You don't really care about the outcome. You know, you just watch it for the technicals, so to speak.
There's probably a little bit of truth. It's definitely getting more now. It's getting more that way now. But I mean, it's definitely, you know what it is? Before I got involved in politics, I used to watch sports,
right?
Just and had that emotional stock invested in it,
right?
Lost the emotional stock in that and it went to politics,
right?
And now,
I did the exact same thing. I used to be huge into sports. And when I got into politics, I my interest in sports started waning dramatically.
Yeah. Now, is it coming back?
Oh, totally. It's gone the other way. Now I couldn't give two shits about politics and I love sports again.
But here's the thing though. But do you give two shits about sports though?
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Like but you don't.
Dude, the Rays lost game one, you know, yesterday to Houston, the Astros, which happens to be my second favorite baseball team. Upset about that. And UCF lost last night in a stunner to Cincy. So, you know, watch that game. I'm really into it. You know, so yeah, I'm totally into sports again.
So, but when you say that you're upset, like, are you actually upset?
bummed. I'll get a little bummed. I'm not like upset. I'm not, you know, throwing beer bottles at the wall or anything, you know. I do beat my wife, but that's pretty much every night anyway, you know.
No, you don't. She might.
You're right. She kicked my ass.
She might beat you. Okay, so like I.
But no, yeah, I am. If you were to picture a sine wave, okay,
yeah,
my interest in politics and my interest in sports seem to be a perfect inverse curve.
I got you. The more you care about one, the less you care about the other.
Yeah, exactly.
And you're really big on the sports level.
Yeah, I'm like totally into sports, so it tells you where I am on politics.
Yeah.
It's pure entertainment these days.
Okay. You
know, both are pure entertainment these days.
But one of them you
and
have...
And they're very similar.
Yeah. I mean...
because really all politics is rooting for Team Red or Team Blue these days. Doesn't matter what kind of penalties they get.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's
doesn't matter if they play dirty.
So now before we go any further, though, I did want to say this week... for those that are listening to the show and you are part of our Patreon, that we have two new people that signed up on the curbside switcheroo level. Jeremy Codner and Greg Jahab have both signed up, and we appreciate that very much. You guys will be able to listen to the second hour.
Greg's great. I talk to him a lot online.
Yeah. Now, again, Greg is great, and so is Jeremy. Anybody that signs up is going to be great, by the way. But I will say this, on the second hour, you guys are in for a good treat because Danielle will be with us in the second hour. So that's always good. And we're going to go through a couple different stories.
Not necessarily on the best topic, though.
Not on the best topic. Yeah. You know what? You know, hold on. Let me just say this.
It's going to be something interesting to explore, but kind of tugging at your heartstrings at the same time.
Yes, but it should be talked about, though. Look, yeah. If anything, the phrase carpe diem is something that's not said enough. Seize the day. You know.
Oh, thanks for clarifying
in case
that.
Because,
yeah,
that.
Nobody knew that. That's the one phrase of Latin that everyone knows.
Yeah. So this week, though, I wanted to go first about my trip down to speak at the Manatee Tea Party. And I'm really trying to pull back on some of the other speaking engagements and stuff like that. So this is probably one of the, and again, I didn't tell these people this either, but it was one of the probably last couple times that I probably will go out and do, like, you know, active speaking on politics and stuff like that. But I wanted to talk a little bit about going down there and what it was all about and kind of, you know, how it went down. Because when I set this up initially, I really was at a different place mentally than I am right now.
And how long ago was that?
It's like a month, maybe a month and a half ago.
Really? The transition has been that rapid, huh?
Yeah. I mean, here's the thing. There's a lot that's gone on. And, you know, when I got sick in June, was it June? Yeah, it was June. When I got sick in June and, you know, I almost died, that everything came into perspective at this point. And it's been a process in doing this. And, you know, I can't say, look, talking to you and kind of, you know, and me and you talking a lot about, you know, doing the show and stuff like that and how we came about to do the show again definitely has something to do with it, but
I take full credit, but
I wouldn't, you don't take full credit, but you can definitely take some credit, but it's definitely going that way more and more where I'm just not seeing the, I want people to help themselves. Like there's no hero coming for anybody. There's no politician that's going to help or anything like that. So when I went there to this Tea Party meeting, I was going there, like my mentality was definitely different. Now, my initial talk that I was going to talk about was actually the constitutional amendments, like what's going to happen in the 2020 election cycle as far as constitutional amendments go, all the different ones that are possibly going to be out there, which one people can vote on, and how you can use those in order to go out there and talk to other people. But before I talked, there's a woman that was the chair of the Manatee County Republican Executive Committee that spoke before I was there to speak. And she gave about, you know, did about 40 minutes. Very nice person, by the way. So I it's going to sound like I'm attacking her, which maybe I am a little bit because I'm upset about a couple things. But I, you know, she talked before I did, and then she said a couple things that just set me off. And then I went up there and I gave a talk that was probably 30 to 45 minutes long that I can only describe as like a release, like a not even an emotional release, but like a political release. Like I almost like a like. I got off my chest a bunch of stuff that I wanted to get off my chest. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, it's, you're kind of like a massage in an Asian parlor type of thing.
I mean, there was none of that going on there, but I think I know what
you're
saying.
That's good, because I just visualized that going on at the Manatee Tea Party, and that was not good.
But basically, like when I got it, here's how it started, is that when I was there listening to her talk, is that one of the things she said is that, well, there's three other people running against President Trump, and I'm not going to mention their names because they're the enemy. And like...
Right. That, yeah, it's that mindset.
Like, here's the thing, though. Like, not only is that, like, and that's where it kind of set me in motion, because as soon as I got up there, the first thing I said was, is I mentioned the three people that were running against him in the Republican primary. There's still a primary that goes on in either one of these parties, even in the Libertarian Party or any of them. There's still primaries that go on. And if you're a member, if you're a
executive
within the political party, then it's your job to actually inform the people as to the pertinent information as to what's going on. And if you're going to sit up there and act that way, like, you don't even understand your job.
Yeah, you've been in politics long enough to know that's not the way it actually works. That's the civics class way it works, and the civics class way isn't the way the world works.
No, you're right. But that's another reason why that my time is running short.
Right.
It's things like that that are causing me to go, you know what, man, I'm not even going to do this anymore. Like, I can't even sit there and do this anymore, because it's things that piss me off. And it's easy to say, well, that's just the Republican Party. No. It's all of them, though.
It is.
It's politics in general. So the first thing I did when I went up there is I laid down and I named all three of the other people that were running for this office. Now, don't get me wrong, I made fun of them in some ways, because honestly, all of them have something to be made fun of.
Right.
And one of them, Bill Weld in particular, is not running like Bill Weld is not running for genuine reasons, in my opinion. Bill Weld is running to just, he doesn't like Trump. And so he's running in the Republican primary against Trump. After he said he would never leave the LP, he left the LP as soon as he could to go run against Trump in the Republican primary.
Bill Weld's is just worthless.
He's just a scumbag. Like, yeah. I said that about Bill Weld. Then I mentioned Joe Walsh or whatever his name is. And I said, and this is where I called kind of Trump an a-hole, but I said that Trump's the only kind of a-hole that can get away with what he's getting away with, because Joe Walsh thinks he can get away with it, but he can't. And then I mentioned Mark Sanford. Now, when I mentioned Mark Sanford, I said, look, now you can make fun of Mark Sanford on the morality side, because, you know, he found his, you know, he had a hooker in South America that he went there, or went to Brazil instead of, you know, doing his job. And that's how he lost, you know, being governor of South Carolina. But he is bringing up a point that needs to be talked about.
Right. I forgot about that.
Oh, yeah.
That Mark Sanford is running for president?
Yeah. Yeah, that Mark Sanford.
What the hell is that guy thinking?
He's running on the
deck. I mean, he went AWOL as governor, and they found him in South America with a hooker.
Yeah. Well, no, with his girlfriend. He wasn't a hooker. It was his mistress.
Okay, well,
I mean, there's a difference.
So, marginal. I mean, he disappeared. Nobody in the state knew where he was.
Yeah, he claimed he was in the Appalachian Mountains, right. And he was in South America. Right.
He was supposed to be at work.
Yeah, but he is running on the debt and the deficit, and that the deficit and the debt are out of control. And so I did say, but it does need to be talked about, that this is what he's running on, and this is why it's important that he's running on this.
But Republicans don't care about that anymore.
And one person in the crowd said, but people don't really care about that stuff anymore. And I said, well, that doesn't change the fact that it's really a bad problem. We need to do it. But I went off on a tangent that was, I could only mark as, it was undercover anarchy.
Right.
That I never used the word anarchist, but I was talking about being an anarchist. And I said to them, I said to the people here, that I said, there's no government policy that's going to fix any of the problems that we have right now. And there's no government problem whatsoever that is going to fix any of this. There's no politician that you're going to elect that's going to get anything fixed. They're all going to fail you. They're all going to suck. You need to take care of it yourself. Is that, you know, we do have problems in this country. I talked about, you know, the number of people that are killing themselves or killing other people. You know, we used to be able to, and I used some cliche stuff like, you know, you used to be able to buy guns off the SEALs catalog and there was no mass shootings really at that point. But now you got mass shootings now. It's not the gun's fault. It's that we have a societal problem. You know what I mean? People are hurting. And so I went down that road a little bit, but at the end of the day, I was saying to them, don't buy into the fear. They all want you to, and I said this, whether it's Republicans or Democrats, they want you to buy into the fear, and you have to stop it from, you got to stop buying into the fear. Now, when I first was, like, Kurt Schultz was there too.
Right. Great guy, Kurt.
I love Kurt. And he was there, and so, when I saw him there, I was like, I felt really, like, better. But then I'm like, man, I don't know how these people are going to take what I'm about to say here, because, like, I'm in a different mindset right now.
Right.
And they loved it. As a matter of fact, there was about, I think, 25 minutes left on this timer that they had. And I asked, and I kind of stopped what I was saying, and I asked the person, I'm like, does that timer include Q&A, or is that timer for just the speaking time? He took the timer and just pushed it down so I couldn't see the time and said, just keep going.
Right.
Like, that really did make me feel good. And I really talked a lot about, I go, there's two principles more than anything else that we need to embrace, and it's voluntary association and property rights. And I went down the road with this, and I just, it was very, like I said, it was very like a release. You know, I almost
cathartic
take it like a,
is the word cathartic, you're looking
that,
for.
Yeah. It was very much that. Like, I really felt so much better, and I felt good that everybody afterwards said, like, that they were so happy that, you know, that they love the speech, they love what I said, and, like, it was really good.
They didn't get it, though.
Maybe.
Trust me, I've been around this, you know, dog chasing tail routine many, many times. They love it when they hear it, but they don't really get it. Eventually, they might. Eventually, some of those people will get it. So you're planting seeds and giving it a little water, but you know, most of them are going to go out there next week and you know, fly their Trump flags, because they still can't break out of the mindset that there is no solution that involves politics. That's what they cannot grasp. They cannot grasp the fact that government never equals solutions. Government only equals problems. Government only creates problems, or they mask problems. At best, they mask problems.
Yeah, no.
They just can't understand that. They still think that there's some type of policy or some, you know, great hero out there, and a lot of people think it's Trump, but, you know, obviously it's not. But they can't break away from that mindset. And it takes a long time. I mean, it really does. It took me 25 years. You know, I became a libertarian in like 1991 and didn't really become an anarchist, realized that even that level of government, just, it doesn't work, because it always becomes a much larger form of government. So the system itself can't even exist if we're to have true freedom.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. And I wouldn't even call myself at this point an anarchist as much as I would call myself, if I was going to define it as a, like, and define it in that term. I think voluntarist is definitely probably the one I would probably identify more than anarchist.
That's an anarchist with training wheels.
Basically.
Yeah.
Look, here's the thing. I think that people are free to if they want to form together and form a group, then they can do it.
Of course.
You know?
And there would be no system to prohibit or promote that.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm just now more and more seeing that there are just no, like, there is no solutions to the problems that we're having. And that the best thing that we can do right now is really to just make fun of it as much as possible. And to really, I don't want to say denigrate it, even though that's the right word for it. But, like, this is why I think that it's also why you're seeing the rise and the proliferation of the actual satire sites,
right,
that are out there.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, first of all, it's becoming easier and easier, but these satire sites, whether it be the Babylon Bee, which is a great one.
Yeah.
The Onion, of course, a classic one. Waterford
Whisper News. It's actually one that's from, it's from Ireland.
Okay.
So, like,
I've seen that a couple of times.
And then there's
a couple others that I've seen too, and I can't recall the names of them off the top of my head.
One of them's like the Pasco Pelican.
Oh,
that's,
yeah.
That's one from Pasco County.
Yeah, and that was good.
Duffel Blog
is a military one.
That's
and
a military
great.
One.
Yeah.
I actually didn't know right away that Duffel Blog was a fake site, by the way.
Oh, you're
a satire
kidding.
Site. I didn't know it instantly.
Oh, God. Yeah, they're awesome.
Now, there's a bunch of left wing sites that are. They're out there, and the reason that they're out there is because so few people read the actual article and only the headlines,
right,
that they're doing it to troll Republicans in order to get them to share out fake news.
Right.
So I think that that's...
Which is very, very easy to do, by the way.
Well, yeah, because nobody reads... Well, nobody reads the articles.
Right, exactly. And especially not... I found, you know, people who identify as conservatives or Trump supporters, it's very, very easy to troll them.
Yeah.
I mean, they are just like the low-hanging fruit, easy targets.
I do them. Think that all sides are pretty easy to troll, though.
It just
depends on the troll.
And it depends on the topic.
Yes, it definitely depends on the topic. That's where like their cognitive dissonance goes away.
Yeah.
Depending on what the topic is.
Right, right.
You know what I mean?
Like, yeah, for example, a lefty, you can troll a lefty on anything on the environment.
Oh, yeah.
You know, a piece of cake.
Well, and that's why, like, and again, we're going to get into this, the stuff that's not fake news.
Right.
But, and we'll get into that in a second here. But the one article from The Onion that I thought was really good was... And it seems like with all these fake ones, there's like a hint of truth to it.
Right.
You know what I mean? And I think Babylon Bee does it more than The Onion does it, but I think that they're doing some of these to almost make a point.
Right.
To make fun of it in a certain way. So like this one that was in The Onion was, Kamala Harris undergoes heart surgery after seeing positive reception for Sanders.
And you know what? The reason that's funny is because you could actually picture a campaign think tank going, well, Sanders got a pretty good bump after a sympathy bump after that heart episode. Should we maybe, you know, come up like, with some type
hurting?
Of, yeah, some type of injury, maybe a twisted knee or something like that, you know, put you on crutches for a couple of days. I could literally see that legitimately happening.
Yeah.
You know,
and The Onion's great. The Onion's, you know, they're awesome. Now the Babylon Bee, on the other hand,
they're
though,
even better.
They are even better. Like
The Onion is, they do it in a different way, but the Babylon Bee is just some of the most creative satire. They're right on. Now, are they a conservative bent? Because they seem to be all over the map. I don't see they have an angle. I don't think The Onion has an angle either. I think they're just in it for the comedy.
From my understanding of the Babylon Bee, the guys that do the Babylon Bee are conservative.
But they're...
Or they're Christian, maybe, more than anything else.
Really?
I think that they're Christian more than anything else.
That's actually awesome.
Yeah, but they're, you know, like, it really does, it really is one of those things where they really do a good job. And they are trolling, like, they're trolling Snopes.
Right.
Because
right.
Snopes started saying, well, they're fake news. And it's like,
yeah.
Like they admit that they're fake news.
Right. Yeah. It says it in the description.
Yeah.
You know,
like it's, you know, it definitely says it's fake news. And so they started trolling them because of this, which I really thought was amazing that they started trolling them for this. And it's only helping them out, too. Like it's only helping.
Sure. Absolutely.
So, like, I really think that, you know, the rise of these satire sites is actually a sign that people are just even more wanting to tune out to like anything that's real anymore. And like, they're just sick of it all. And they just want to see people make fun of it.
Well, it's gotten so ridiculous that it's hard not to mock it. But it, and in other ways, it's gotten so ridiculous that it's hard to, it's hard to tell satire from reality. And, you know, not in like a, not like you can't actually tell the difference between satire and reality, just that the satire, even in its most extreme, is part of it is plausible. You know, like that Kamala Harris story. You know, that's plausible.
I mean, there's definitely a group of people that would have said, yeah, boy, it would be nice if you came up with something like that right now to get us a bump in the numbers.
Right.
Like, there's definitely a conversation that somebody could have had that said that.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, let's go through your medical records. We'll find something in there,
you know. And again, it's one of these things where you also have like when they go after Trump, like this says about Trump. Please guide me in my darkest hour, Lord. Praise Trump kneeling before a portrait of himself. You know, of him being younger.
That totally plausible. Like totally plausible.
You know,
yeah, I've seen people put out like, you know, portraits of Trump with a halo and, you know, like in a Christ-like pose, and they're not being satirical.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, they're not. There's definitely some news that comes out there that you think is satirical that's not satirical.
That's the harder part. It's not figuring out what is satire. It's figuring out what isn't satire.
Yeah.
That's what's becoming harder these days. That's what Snopes should be doing.
Well, yes.
This one is not satire.
I think grading them is the way to do it.
Right. Like, we need fiction and nonfiction. We need satire and non-satire.
Yeah. So on the Waterford Whispers news one, though, so they had this one that says, pressure now on Irish government to choose between backstop or steaming pile of shit.
Well, that's an obvious,
but it's just funny though.
Oh, it's funny, but it's much more obvious.
Yeah. It's making fun of it. Oh, could the reintroduction of wolves solve Ireland's homeless problem?
Right. Well, you never know. I mean, eating babies might save the environment.
Well, and that's why when they were in that, we'll go into this part.
Right.
So in one of the town halls that just happened for AOC or Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, there was a woman that went in there that basically was saying we needed to start eating babies in order to save the environment.
Right. Right.
Like, and she sounded like, here's the thing. She sounded like she was mentally deranged.
Right.
And so when you look at what the reaction from Alexandria.
Well, no. Hang on a second. She sounded like a lot of ultra-left environmentalists.
Well, I've never heard an ultra-left environmentalist talk about actually eating babies.
I understand that. But
one scientist did want to talk about eating human flesh, though. But
It tastes like pork. It's not bad. But the thing about it is she... first of all, we'll let the cat out of the bag. It was a troll job.
It was absolutely a troll job.
But it was such a masterful troll job, and it was so plausible that AOC, instead of saying, okay, yeah, just stop being ridiculous, when the woman was done talking, after she said, and I'm paraphrasing as best I can, we need to reduce the population. I mean, we could bomb Russia, but that's not enough. We need to start eating babies now. We've only got a few months. Eat the babies.
And she had a shirt that said, eat the babies.
I want one of those shirts, by the way. But the point is and that was hysterical. But AOC's reaction was the really revealing thing. She, instead of reacting with, you know, and I've been in situations with this on the campaign trail.
Yeah, yeah.
Where a crazy has come up and you just have to say, no, we're not going to do that. But here's what we can do. You know, she didn't even say no. She just was like, oh, yeah. And she's nodding her head like in concern.
Yeah.
And she said, well, there's a lot of things we're considering when it comes to climate change. So she did not even... deny the concept outright. Now, there's a reason she do it. Obviously, AOC, she's out there like fucking Pluto, folks, but she's not crazy enough to promote eating babies.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
But the fact that she believed that this woman was legitimate and a supporter of hers meant that she wasn't going to publicly deny her concept. She was just being nice to her because she thought this was a legitimate supporter. So it goes to show you that at least in AOC's mind, some of her supporters could plausibly think like this.
Yeah. And to not like, here's the thing.
If
you're an elected official and somebody comes into your freaking town hall and says, we need to start eating children.
Right.
I really think that what you need to do is to tell them, no, you don't need to be.
Like, right. You have to at least start with, no, that's not something we're going to do. Like, for example, when Hank Johnson was worried that Guam might tip over.
Yeah.
The admiral he was talking to said, no, sir, we don't believe that's a possibility. You know, you at least have to address it that way. But she didn't even do that.
Yeah.
You know?
Like, and don't get me... Look, it was a phenomenal troll job. Oh, like, it really
fantastic.
Was a phenomenal troll job.
Yeah,
fantastic. Like, they really did a great job on the trolling on this one. But, and it really is, like, can't politicians ever just tell somebody, like... Look, when we went out there, when you went out there, when I went out there, if somebody said something like that, you... Like, I can understand the thought process of, well, I don't want to sit there and get in an argument with somebody about something.
Right.
But there's a difference between, like, having a difference of opinion on some kind of political issue and eating babies.
Right.
Like, there's a big difference between the two.
Yeah, right.
Like you can, I think you can safely say that you, no eating babies is probably going to, you're going to be on like the side of 95 to 99% of the people in the room.
Yeah, I think, you know, cannibalism, especially infanticide cannibalism, is usually an issue that you can be strongly against.
Yeah.
Without hurting your political chances, you know.
I actually thought that AOC had maybe a little more testicular fortitude than that.
Not against her own people. That's the thing. Yeah. So in her mind, this was a comrade.
Yeah.
You know, they were on the same team. Little did she know. And she should have known. And that's a lack of situational awareness, because you get someone like that. If I'm standing on that stage, my first thought is, oh, this is a troll job. You know?
Yeah.
I mean, that nobody could think like this. So it's either extreme crazy or a troll job. And either way, you shut it down.
Yeah.
You know?
You go, hold on, hold on. And that's when you stop and go, hold on a second. Did you just say eat babies?
Right. Yeah.
You mean like human babies, right?
Right.
Like eat babies. You're not talking about like venison with calves or something like that. No, we're not going to do that.
Well, wait a second. No one in that movement would ever promote veal. So it had to be human babies.
Yeah.
That would only be the acceptable answer.
So now on the other side of the fence, with somebody else trolling on and moving the troll jobs from just on the Onion or in the Babylon Bee into real life, there was actually a satirical ad that was put in New York subway trains about need a lawyer, call Crazy Rudy. And it basically was a, you know, like a poster looking thing. It said, you know, back channel deals, you know, cable news appearances, has no shame, will work for free, and then call a number, and then, you know, basically for Rudy Giuliani. Which, don't get me wrong, Rudy Giuliani is like the worst lawyer in the world. The only one that was worse than that lawyer was Michael Cohen.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I gotta tell you, when it comes to picking really, really bad lawyers, Trump is he's amazing. He does the best bad lawyers.
Right. And I met Giuliani. He's an asshole. Yeah, just a total douchebag.
And he's like, if you watch some of these interviews he's done, like he's causing the president more problems than he's helping.
Oh, yeah.
Like, yeah. It's getting worse for Trump because of Rudy Giuliani.
Right.
Almost like he's doing it on purpose.
Well, he's about to roll over on him, too.
He might.
Yeah, he's gonna. He's definitely gonna roll over on him.
And if there's somebody that's actually gonna get him in trouble, it could be Rudy Giuliani.
Right.
So,
right.
I mean, we'll see what happens, but like, to see this Subway ad, though, you're like, again, this is another one of these things of like, oh, this is great, and we need to make fun of all of it.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, equal opportunity.
And see, that's what I like. See, if it remains where everybody's just trolling each other, but it's left trolling right and right trolling left, then you're still kind of in the, all you've done is you've just changed the way politics operates and made it, you know, less civil, basically more entertaining, but less civil. But you're still treating politics as sports. What I like is, I think this is a step on the path to ridiculing the system of government itself, and I think we're getting closer and closer to that. And that, I think, is what, you know, that's where we need to go, where everybody stops taking the entire process of politics, the entire system of government seriously. That's where we need to get to. And I think this is a step in the right direction.
Yeah, no, I think it's definitely going more in that direction.
Now, Trump came out with a good troll job this week too, which I actually thought I got applauded for this one. Of course, Nickelback, everybody knows the song Photograph, and most of you probably know the section in the video where do you know the lead singer in Nickelback? What's his name?
I don't remember his name.
Anyway, the blonde guy. You know who I'm talking about.
Yeah. Canadian.
Yeah, he's holding up a photograph and he's saying, look at this photograph. And probably most of you know it from the meme that was, look at this graph, which was just, I don't know why that struck me as just absolutely hilarious.
Yeah, well, yeah, that picture itself has turned into a meme, and you just insert a different picture in there.
Right.
And then you just look at this photograph or whatever that photograph is.
But so Trump used that and put in a picture of Joe Biden and what's his son's name?
Hunter Biden.
Hunter Biden.
And the Ukraine oil guys.
You're right. Right. Exactly. And you know, great troll job. I mean, that's it. That's funny. But what's even better is Nickelback came back and put a copyright claim on it. So Twitter took it off of Trump's Twitter feed. I mean, it's just, and you know, folks, this is the president of the United States, the most powerful man in the world, using a Nickelback meme that is getting taken down by a copyright claim from Nickelback. It's absurdity to the nth degree. I mean, you can't...
Like, that's real. Like, that wasn't an article in The Onion.
None of that was in The Onion.
Yeah, that really did happen.
I mean, Not The Onion is a, you know, essentially a hashtag these days, but it exists because it has to.
Yeah.
If you read that entire article, let's say you read that story start to finish in an article, would you know whether it was real or satire? I mean, if you didn't know that it was real, wouldn't you assume something like that had to be satire? But there you go. I mean, that's the political reality we live in. And it's wonderful. It's absolutely glorious. I mean, for guys like me and more so you, who look at, you know, politics as entertainment these days and don't have any, you know, any dog in the fight. This is just fantastic. You know, it's great.
Well, like, now here's the question, though. Like, you know, a lot of times they're comparing the president of the United States to different people, right? Like, you know, the left wants to compare him to Hitler, and, you know, the right wants to compare him to, you know,
Jesus
or whatever. Right. But if we were really going to...
Those are honest to God real extremes, that people on the left think he's Hitler and people on the right do think he's Jesus. So. Yeah.
So, but if there's one person that you could really compare him to more than anybody else at this point, isn't it really President Dwayne Alonzo Mountain Dew Herbert Camacho?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, isn't that where we really need to go with this?
That's the guy. Most prophetic movie in modern history.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, it really is. It was an amazing movie.
Yeah. Truly was.
It, you know what? And it was
Idiocracy is a movie we're talking about, if you're not aware.
Yeah, yeah. It's Idiocracy is
and,
the name
and
of the movie.
And the character Alex, I can never get the name right, but I know, you know.
President Dwayne Alonzo Mountain Dew Herbert Camacho.
Right. Played by Terry Crews. Yeah,
Terry Crews.
Great actor.
He did a great job on that character, by the way.
It was fantastic. Fantastic. But the movie Idiocracy in itself is... so prophetic,
you know? Yeah,
especially on the political side. You know, that's really, it seems like we're only a couple of generations away from that.
We're a couple being maybe the long term.
Yeah, it's just that's all not that's not 500 years from now. That's 4 election cycles.
Yeah, I didn't say millennial.
It's the last election cycle before the AI takes over.
I mean, it's just, but to see that, like, to watch what's going on, to see the president utilizing Twitter the way that he's utilizing Twitter, having and look, when you ran for office, when I ran for office, we really wanted to see serious people running for office. And now it's nothing. I mean, there's no serious people. Like, people go crazy. And I said this when I was down in Manatee, I said this in Manatee too. Like, people just think because Trump acts the way he does that everybody can start acting that way. Like, they're all just acting that way. And the people that are serious, not all of them, but a lot of them are very serious, though. They're not serious anymore. Like, they don't do serious stuff. And they don't answer questions seriously, but maybe they never did.
I don't think they ever did. I think they just realize they don't have to pretend to be serious anymore.
That's true. Okay, yeah. That's probably a good way to put it. And... so, you know, you should give Trump credit, I think, for breaking the system as it was. I mean, he definitely should get some credit for that.
Did he mean to, though? I don't think he meant to.
I don't think he meant to do it the way he's doing it.
I don't think he meant to win the election to begin with. And all this has just been, you know, him winging it.
Yeah. But, I mean, it makes for phenomenally entertaining television, though.
Oh, shit. Yeah. What would we talk about if, if, like, Trump wasn't in office?
I can't believe we got off the air in the beginning. Like, we got off the air, like, just before he started, like, running.
Right.
Like, that's the crazy part. Like, we almost got off the air. We got off the air way too soon at that point to not, you know, to be able to go through and, like, the beginning of the Trump thing. But now we're on the air now, so now it's nice. I mean, I always call it the reality show.
Right.
But I don't want to spend too much time on it. But, man, there's just some things that you have to talk about.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, you can't... like we said before, the guy just consumes all the oxygen in the room. You know, it just, that's the way it is.
Yeah. Now, this is a story that was not a part of The Onion or anything else, but we definitely did want to talk about it in the first hour, though. And that is that the woman that was 62 died in a portable toilet explosion.
Right.
So
right.
What is going on with this one?
So many questions. So many questions. Where exactly was it in Florida?
Is it St. Augustine?
St. Augustine.
A Florida okay. woman. Florida woman.
Yeah, this is a Florida woman story.
What an equal opportunity thing that we have now is that not just Florida man, but we have Florida woman.
Florida crazy knows no gender.
Florida crazy is it knows no gender.
And,
you're right.
God love it. And here's the interesting thing. This was like three doors down from her house. All right. So there's and that's my first confusion here. So there's a porta potty in front of a house that's under construction, three doors down from this woman's house. Why would you go to it? I mean, who's sitting in their living room and said, "Oh, I got to drop the kids off at the pool." instead of going into my bathroom in my house, I'm going to go a few doors down to the porta potty in front of the construction site.
Well, and then how does it blow up?
Well, there's a lot of reasons it could have blown up. I mean, methane gas for one. I mean, you put a whole bunch of human excrement and the one of the outputs of
that.
Yeah,
but this ain't at a concert though. You know what I mean? Like, this is in front of somebody's house. There's not a whole lot of people going to the bathroom.
Hang on a second. Who works on construction sites?
Construction workers?
Mexicans. And you know what Mexicans can do to a porta potty? You eat them tacos and burritos and then hit that porta potty, you got a methane explosion waiting to happen.
I don't know, but I feel like that's racist.
It is kind of racist.
I think that might be.
I have a buddy who, he's from Haiti, and he actually is a porta potty. that's his job. He goes and cleans out the porta potties.
Yeah, yeah.
Does it for a living. And every time I see him and we shake hands, it's just like, oh, shit, man, I just remember what you do for a living. It's like, not even a fist bump next time. but he actually told me that Mexicans, and he says because the plumbing is so bad in Mexico that a lot of recent immigrants, when they use toilet paper, they don't throw it down the toilet. They put it in the trash can. Which is pretty disgusting. And he says, for whatever reason, they do the same thing in porta potties. So when you go into a porta potty that a lot of Mexicans have used, you'll see used toilet paper shoved in the corner because they don't want to throw it down the hole because that's their condition to do that. So anyway,
could be the reason why, though, is that because it's not a wet material at that point. It's dry.
Well, it's pretty wet. I mean, we're talking, you know, tacos and burritos here. It's Chipotle.
Well, yeah, but
wet.
It's not all. Oh, it's so gross. Really, really very gross.
God, way, way bad. But yeah, it is possible. Getting back to the Florida woman story, it is possible for a methane gas buildup to happen in these porta potties. So if she's sitting, you know, on the, and again, why would you go?
Why
to the porta potty?
You're a 62-year-old woman. Like,
you have a home.
Go to your home.
That's your home.
Go to your home.
Are you too good for your home? I mean, just what? So conceivably, she could have been sitting on the pot and maybe went to light up a cigarette. You know, I don't know.
You think if she lit up a cigarette?
Well, there had to be some spark. There was an explosion and the porta potty was burned literally to the ground. There was nothing left of the porta potty except a stain. Yeah, you know, and I feel bad because a woman died. Man. I mean,
that's true.
It's we should be a little more respectful. But if you're gonna die in a porta potty explosion, yeah, you probably
you get what you get. You get what you get. You get what you get at this one. Now, I will say that so last summer when I was knocking on doors for a candidate,
right,
in Pinellas County. I had to, you know, there's a couple times where I really, really had to go to the bathroom, but I was nowhere near close to any bathroom. And I was lucky enough that I did find porta potties at some houses that were being worked on.
Now, were you taking the Browns to the Super Bowl or were you just, relieving yourself standing up?
Both.
Really?
One of them had to do with the Browns thing. But one of them didn't.
I mean, because I got to be in a real desperate situation to sit down at a porta potty.
Well, I wouldn't say
there's
that you
always
sit down.
A
I think you kind of
nearby.
Float. I think you kind of float more than anything else.
You do the squat.
You do that as much as you can.
You know, the kind of arms around the knees type of thing.
Yeah,
I'm not that well balanced, and you know, I would fear ending up actually knee deep in blue.
Yeah.
You know.
Now, this may not be related to this, just so you know, but there was another Florida woman, not to be outdone by the exploding porta potty.
Right.
Is that there was another Florida woman arrested after 24 pipe bombs were found in her home.
Yeah. Yeah. I saw that.
A 27-year-old. She was in the Tampa area, by the way.
Yeah. She was in Tampa.
And her parents discovered a trove of pipe bombs, weapons, and bomb-making materials in her bedroom. That's got to scare the crap out of you, too, though.
Really?
Well, I mean, if you're the parents.
You know, as a kid.
I wouldn't trust my kid to not have a pipe bomb that wouldn't blow up.
Okay. As a kid who actually made pipe bombs, that seems like growing up to me. I mean, we used to, my parents used to save, remember the old cranberry big gallon jugs? That cranberry juice used to come in, like the big Ocean Spray. They were the big glass jugs. Yeah. Well, I would always ask my parents to save those because we figured out we could make fire bombs by lining the inside of those with gasoline, just a light layer of gasoline, and Drano crystals. And you put, I'm teaching people how to make a bomb on the radio here. This is wonderful. But anyway, my point is you would throw them and it would make an awesome fire bomb. So yeah, I mean, as a kid who grew up making bombs and never had any nefarious reason for using them and never intended to use them to harm anyone. That doesn't seem that outlandish to me, but if the parents were scared of their own kid, that tells me that there was probably a reason that this girl probably had malicious intent, but just, you know, a kid building bombs in and of itself, I don't think is necessarily a bad thing.
But okay, and I don't want to, not that I want to be sexist here about the pipe bombs,
right,
but it just didn't seem like that's like a girl thing. I mean, I don't want to say like most men go into the STEM fields for the same reason.
Hang on,
but
did you take a look at her photograph?
Yeah, I looked at that photograph.
She looks like a
sorry Nickelback
is gonna shut us down, but she looked like you know, at best a tomboy and probably wanting to be transgender. She looked more male than female.
I mean, she looked butch. I'm not going to say anything. She looked, she definitely looked butch, but
yeah,
she just looked normal butch though. She didn't look anything. It wasn't too crazy, but
so hang on a second. You never built bombs as a kid. I mean, we actually had like, 5-pound cans of gunpowder and stuff.
I never had
those
things.
In retrospect, we had access to a lot of explosives growing up, and it's amazing nobody died. But we used to go out and have war games, and I had one buddy who ended up, he just retired from the Army now, but he was an Apache chopper pilot.
Wow.
He used to go out there. We used to go out and shoot each other with BB and pellet guns
I never did
bottle
that
rockets and. But he would go out there. He was like an explosive expert, and he would set up tripwires with, you know, pyrotechnics and stuff like that. So if he got out in the woods before we did, we were just fucked.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah. So, and there were, you know, some trips to the hospital over that. People have scars from that.
I mean, the only thing I ever made was like an MRE bomb when I was in the Marine Corps.
What was an MRE bomb?
Oh, you never heard of an MRE bomb?
No.
Okay, so the things that used to heat the MREs, the material, if you broke that off and then stuck it in like a Gatorade bottle.
Right.
And then put some water in it to do it, and then it would blow up.
Yeah, yeah.
I would do those, but that was, you know.
That was pretty lame.
It was pretty lame, actually.
Yeah, didn't do much. Now, the crackers, we used to use them as like throwing stars.
Well, yeah.
You could stick those things really in a sucked. Tree, man.
Oh, yeah, those things.
Oh, really, yeah, sucked. If they were still in the package. I know. I hated those crackers.
Crackers were the worst.
But dehydrated pork patties, oh, my God, best ever.
Well, here's
the
thing.
I could still get my hands on those.
You can still get your hand on those things, I think.
I don't think they make those kind anymore. That's 80s. No.
Yeah, the newer Marines are a little bit different than that. You can still get one, like the ones that I got before, they still make the same kind of ones when I was in the Marine Corps.
Yeah.
That they had there. But I just don't understand the pipe bomb thing though. Like you were, and then if you had them under your bed, like I would be so nervous that something would explode.
Really? You don't know how a pipe bomb works then.
Obviously not.
It needs an ignition source.
Well, since I didn't build them, then I probably don't know how they work.
Right? See? There you go. You missed out on a major, you know, thing from childhood. You were neglected as a child.
I guess so.
Yeah, because... Yeah,
I'll have to talk to my mother about that. I didn't realize that it was such a... You know, now... I didn't realize it was so bad.
Now I'm curious. Honestly, and maybe this is something we can talk about on the page or, you know, on our Facebook page. I'm curious... How many other kids grew up at least making bombs? I mean, we would find, you know, any type. We would like buy firecrackers, open them up and take out the gunpowder from them. And, you know, that was before we could get our hands on actual containers of gunpowder. But I am curious how many other kids out there grew up making explosives. Or am I just kind of, should I seek professional help?
Well, you know, here's the thing. Here's the thing. So did you
as a kid make bombs?
As a kid make bombs. Okay.
Yeah, I'm curious to know. I really wonder if other kids did that, or I just had a rather odd childhood. But it wasn't just me.
Now, are we going to put that on the? Now, let me ask you a question. Are we putting that on the in the members page, or are we putting that in?
Put that in the open one.
In the open.
Yeah, because that way we get more interaction on that.
Okay.
Yeah, okay. And we talked about it in hour one. So.
Yeah, that's true. We did talk about it in hour number one.
But yeah, it's just something I'm curious about.
Should we go make bombs for fun, though? Like, should we at least have some kind of...
Well, I can teach you how to make a pipe bomb.
Well, no, I'm not...
But these days, I wouldn't want to do it. I mean, apparently, you can just go to jail just for doing that.
Well, even saying it, it's not, depending on where you're at.
Oh, shit, really? Am I going to get red flagged over this?
I don't know.
I do not have any firearms. I do not have any pipe bombs. I'm telling you something that happened more than 7 years ago, so the statute of limitations had expired.
Well, it's up on the page right now, just okay, so you good. Know. So it is up on the page.
Yeah. So don't tell us if you're currently making bombs. Just tell us if you ever made one as a child or a teenager. I shouldn't say child. Child's the wrong word. You know, we were teenagers basically doing
it. Yeah. No, I got you. Now, the other thing I wanted to talk about in this hour, like I didn't have a way to segment to this one, by the way. So we did have a couple segments or a couple segues.
They
were
so good. Yeah, you did excellent today. I didn't even want to interrupt the flow.
That was because it was going.
It was
so
that
well.
Good. Yeah, I was going to commend you on them, but now that you went ahead and whipped your dick out and said, "Hey, look how great I am!" Fuck you. They suck.
No, they were great.
No. They were amateur. They were pathetic.
Oh, your ass.
They would have been fine if you hadn't said anything about it.
Yeah, I got you.
You know.
So now, in December of 2016, just before Trump got into office, he was talking about how you know that there's billions and billions of dollars that we could be saved on military purchases and stuff like that. And so a lot of times when Trump was campaigning, he was campaigning against, you know, overt defense spending. And I actually know something about this from in real life from another person. But there's a lot of people that have said that you could save a lot of money in the defense spending right now. But every time that somebody actually does that, they end up firing those people. So while Trump's critics were questioning whether he was actually capable of achieving big savings in the military budget, over at the Pentagon, the man whose job it was to negotiate those weapons deals welcomed the president's attention to the issue. So like somebody was like, yeah, this is great. So this guy by the name of Assad, Saeed Assad, he was the Pentagon's pricing director, told attendees at a conference held by McCloskey and Credit Suisse on March 27th, just 2 months after the inauguration, is that when you get somebody who's the president of the United States who understands precisely what to do, what you do for a living and understands how it's actually done, it becomes a pretty rewarding thing to do, especially when someone's you know top world class in terms of negotiating. So this guy can see the 10,000-foot view in what's going on in defense spending and thinks that you can save billions of dollars in defense spending. So you would think if this is going to happen, boy, this is going to be great. You know what I'm saying? But within 2 years of Trump's entrance into the White House, this Assad guy removed from his jobs and his effort to save money and recover hundreds of millions of dollars is tabled completely.
Of course.
Like they're not trying to get rid. They don't want to get rid of any of the spending at all. Like this guy can actually, he was finding ways to save money, potential or contractor voter fraud.
Right.
Like it brought him in conflict with, because it was bringing him in conflict with the top weapons buyers.
Mm-hmm.
They got rid of that dude.
Oh, of course. Look, there's a system out there where the government overpays military contractors, and then military contractors kick back in various different ways to the top generals at the Pentagon. And it's a system that goes on. And also, a lot of the budgeting for the military is going to off-book black projects. So they have to pad in places to funnel that money into the black projects. So those are the reasons that you're never going to have a legitimate audit of the Pentagon. Every time it's tried, every time they try to save money or, you know, things like that, it's never going to happen. Essentially what happens is all these generals end up working for Boeing and Lockheed and United Defense and Raytheon after they retire.
Yeah.
And that's the kickback. And they get a cushy, basically an emeritus job where they get a six-figure salary on top of their six-figure pension, and they do nothing. And that the reason they get it is because they make sure that back in the day when they were the ones signing the contracts and acquiring all the military gear, they were paying top dollar and then some. And that's the way the system is built. And if anyone, you know, tries to upset that apple cart, they're gone.
Yeah. So like just to make sure, this is in the story that was on Yahoo News, by the way. So to be clear, the department strongly disputes the claim that even 1% of contract spending has been lost to defective pricing. They won't even claim that there is a 1% mistake with what they have going on.
Sure. Sure, because if you admit that even if it's a minor problem, that potentially means it needs to be looked into and corrected. And they don't want anyone looking into it and correcting it. It's the same reason that police never admit that there's a problem with brutality. You know, they do their own investigation, everything looks fine. You know, it's the same type of concept. They don't want people in their business because they got a cushy little gig where they can, you know, everybody is making money on the taxpayer's dime and everybody's happy about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, hold on. I want to say this. This is what happened to this dude, by the way. So this guy's trying to, again, this guy's an American hero in the fact that he's trying to save our taxpayers, you know, hundreds of millions, if not billions of dollars.
And in the Pentagon and military industrial complex, he's a villain.
He's a villain.
Yeah.
So at the end of October, Assad was given an ultimatum. He could be demoted to a position within the Defense Contractor Management Agency in Boston starting in January 2019, or he would be terminated. Assad, who had been preparing for retirement, decided that he would leave the Defense Department at the end of the year. So, like, they were holding this guy's retirement because he spent his career
right.
doing this. I mean, and look, when he spent his career doing this, he was doing it because, I mean, I'm not going to dig into the guy's motives, but I'm sure he was trying to do this because he felt that, you know, the defending the country was a good idea and that he wanted to be a part of that.
Right.
And this is the way that they treat the guy.
Yeah.
Like, amazing.
Well, it was a threat to him. I mean, it's not that amazing, really, if you understand how it all works.
Yeah, no, you're right. I mean, you're right, but it's just...
Look, I'm someone, I used to work for a defense subcontractor, so I've seen how a lot of these government contracts works and how the bidding process works and how the contracting works, and it's all designed... Like, when a contract goes out, in a lot of cases, it's already a foregone conclusion who's going to get the bid, and whatever price that they charge is the price that it is. And written into the RFP or the RFQ, request for proposal or request for quote that the Pentagon's going to put out, is basically language that only one vendor can meet. And it's just designed that way. And it's done through the process of backroom deals between the generals and colonels in procurement and the, you know, salespeople at Raytheon and Boeing and Lockheed and so on and so forth. And that's just the way it's done. You know?
Well,
this guy, it probably said, hey, we can stop doing it this way and actually, you know, save a whole lot of money.
Yeah. No. And funny thing is that when I used to do purchasing for the Marine Corps.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, you got experience in it too. Yeah.
I had to go out and get a cell phone bid on for cell phones for all the recruiters in the Tampa Bay or in the Central Florida area. And out of all the bids I found, there was one that was the most expensive by far. And I was getting ready to pull the trigger on the one that I liked, which I thought was actually the best bang for the buck. It wasn't even the lowest price one, but it was pretty low, but it gave me the best. They gave my phone the best
value.
Features. And yeah, it had the best bang.
Like if you were buying it for yourself, that's the one you would buy.
That's correct.
Yeah.
And that's the way I treated it whenever I did purchasing.
Right.
They took the role away from me of picking this because they were going to do it at the at the district level. So they just moved it to the next level. And my thought was, well, they were just going to get a big, you know, they were going to get a big contract with all of them, right? Well, I found out that they actually did get the contract. They went with the most expensive one. So mm-hmm. like all the ones that I found, the one that was the most expensive by far is the one they picked.
Right.
Like
somebody got a kickback somewhere.
Somebody did.
I guarantee it.
I'm sure somehow that's the way it is.
And folks, that's the way 90% of government works.
Yeah, somebody's got the inside Iggy on it, and
yep.
That's yep. just the way it works.
That's the, and in a lot of ways, that's the entire, these days at least, that's the entire purpose of government.
Well,
to make a handful of people really rich.
So, but when you hear about, like, when people want to hide behind the spending, of like, even when Trump did it, where he talked about how, well, you know, the Defense Department was decimated in the Obama years. Right. Like, are you kidding
that's
me?
That's just wrong. Like, that's just, not true.
Yeah. The only thing that's decimating the Defense Department is that we got so many troops in so many different areas that the suicide rate is 22 people a day.
Right.
Like, that's, like,
yeah.
There's a human cost going on right now, but that has more to do with the fact that we're in all these different countries doing things we shouldn't be doing right now instead of just protecting and having national actual defense.
We're putting our people through a literal and psychological meat grinder.
Yeah, for double the price.
Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly.
For double the price, you know, and we're arguing over, you know, look, and just when they redid the budget, we're $1 trillion over the budget with Trump. Like, you could lower the cost, bring a lot of these people home, and have a much better actual defense.
Well, wait a second. I seem to recall Trump saying paying off the national debt was easy.
He's also said he loved debt. He was the king of debt, too. So he said both.
Well, there you go.
When you talk out of both sides of your mouth,
yeah,
you tend to be able to kind of point to whatever the thing was.
Yeah, you can pick where you're right or where you're wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's what you can do.
Yeah.
Which is sad, by the way. It's very, very sad. Well, Adrian, I actually had a different outro I was going to use.
Do we hit an hour already?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. No. Hour number one in the bag. Hour number two.
You know, hang on a second. You do realize that in the bag essentially is a colloquialism for being drunk, right? You've always said in the bag. It's in the can. In the can.
Oh.
Did you know that was the radio terminology?
I actually think I did know that it was the radio terminology.
It's film terminology because you would put the film reel into the film can, you know. But yeah, so the show is not in the bag.
Oh,
occasionally we are in the bag, but the show never
is in the bag.
It's incapable of being so.
Oh, okay. Well, hour number one is done and in the can.
In the can.
Adrian,
what are you taking a crap in the can? Is that what you're going
you
with?
You just said in the can.
Dude, really? Why you always,
I hate you.
Why you always got to take it to sophomore
I
place like that?
I just hate you. So in hour number two, we are going to be discussing the closing down of the Liberty First Network. Danielle will be in on the show with us, though. She's all set up, ready to go.
Special guest appearance.
Special guest appearance. So she is going to be there, but she's in hour number two. We are going to start the new show dictionary with the two new words that we're putting in the show dictionary. We are going to talk about the adopted 6-year-old girl that may actually be a 22-year-old homicidal dwarf.
Awesome story.
How smart cities are creating the mass surveillance nightmare. How the DEA is allowing increases in opioid production as overdose deaths rose, which is to more show you how the government is just horrible. And we are going to be talking about a funeral that me and Danielle went to for a young woman by the name of Megan and some of the things that we had learned from that. But in order to hear all of that, you do have to actually listen to the show in hour number two on your Patreon. And if you go to patreon.com/unattended baggage, you can hear it at that address. So patreon.com/unattended baggage, and we'll see you in hour number two.